Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll talk to Bob Herbert in just a second. Some of you may have heard Police Commissioner Ray Kelly on this program on Tuesday, and some of you may have missed it since we were running the Robert Gates confirmation hearings on AM. So some of you chose that. Now, I asked Kelly about one of the looming issues in the investigation of the police shooting in Queens, the follow-up raids on Sean Bell's social circle, and whether this amounted to a kind of harassment of witnesses in the case to cover the police's backsides. And we're going to play a little bit of what Ray Kelly said about that for those of you who didn't hear it, and then talk to Bob Herbert about it. Here it is.
Now, warrants were executed, not just that warrant, but other warrants were executed that were related to this case, and some information was obtained as a result of these warrants. Many of the witnesses in this case, certainly some people in the club, have obtained lawyers. They're not willing to talk to the police. So we use those warrants in an effort to get information.
Some people see this as the NYPD, some of the individuals particularly, trying to cover their backsides, going after witnesses instead of investigating what they did.
No, that's certainly not the case. This investigation is being done by our Internal Affairs Bureau. All information that we obtain is turned over to the district attorney. We have an obligation to investigate any police shooting, and we're carrying out our obligation.
Joining us now to react to that and talk more generally about the case is New York Times columnist Bob Herbert. His column this morning, Waiting for Answers. Hi, Bob. Welcome back to WNYC.
How are you, Brian? Good to talk to you.
Nice to have you again. Do you want to react, first of all, to that little exchange?
Well, yeah. You know, and I'd like to preface it by saying, you know, I have really admired Ray Kelly, and I've written a lot about him over the years, and I think that he's been a refreshing change from some previous police commissioners. But he's in a tough situation here. And what he was talking about is the way the police have, for example, gone aggressively, right down to invading apartments and that sort of thing, to supposedly get info from so-called witnesses in this case. But at the same time, they haven't even talked to the police officers who fired the weapons, who presumably would know more about the incident than anyone else. And so I do think that to a great extent, the cops are trying to cover their backsides here.
Now, you quote someone from the DA's office in your column who says, look, that's the procedure. You want to gather up all the testimony, all the evidence from the witnesses before you interview the suspects, so you have everything to throw at them.
Well, in the first place, it's tough viewing this strictly from the standpoint of suspects, because that assumes that the cops committed a criminal act.
Or they're suspected of potentially.
Exactly. But if you or I, for example, had been involved in a shooting and the police presumed or suspected that it was a homicide or unjustified, they would have attempted to interview us immediately. They would have had to read us our rights, and we would not be obligated to incriminate ourselves. But they certainly would have attempted to find out the information. And one of the things that I'm very concerned about here is 2 points. One is, of course, each day that passes, the cops' memory of what actually happened diminishes somewhat. And then the second thing, of course, is if it is determined that there was some kind of criminal act here, well, the cops have an opportunity to coordinate their stories.
We can take phone calls on the police shooting in Queens. For New York Times columnist Bob Herbert, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 this morning. I did notice that you started your column, Bob, writing, "I don't know whether the undercover cops who shot and killed Sean Bell and wounded his two friends should be criminally indicted. I wasn't there, and not enough information has emerged publicly to make a determination." Some people think they are pretty convinced that there should be criminal indictments in this case. Why are you not?
Well, some people may be convinced, but I've covered enough stories over the years, and especially in the criminal justice sphere, to know that you can be surprised by information that may come out subsequently. So I'm not interested in a rush to judgment here. What I'm really interested in is a thorough, honest investigation of what happened, and then let the chips just fall wherever.
And do the raids on members of Sean Bell's social circle constitute not just a part of a full investigation, but almost an obligation of the police, as I think Ray Kelly was getting to in that clip, because they have to, first they have to find out if there was a gun on the scene and another man with a gun on the scene, because that may have informed whether the police opened fire or whether they continued, or, you know, why they continued to fire. And secondly, to spread out from there just as a matter of obligation. Do you see any obligation there?
Sure, there's an obligation to investigate this thing thoroughly. I certainly see an obligation there, but there's a difference between attempting to question potential witnesses and conducting raids and knocking down doors and invading people's apartments and charging them criminally and then finding out, you know, within a day or two that it's not legitimate to have charged them, so you have to drop the charges. It all goes to the way people are treated, and part of the problem here is that people, African Americans, and especially African Americans in poor neighborhoods, are treated differently frequently by the cops than others. And I really want to see that stop.
Let me play another Ray Kelly clip. I'm just going to let this speak for itself, my question and his answer. At very least, in this case in Queens, a tragic mistake was made. Has it occurred to you to apologize on behalf of the police department to the families or the people of the neighborhood?
We simply don't have enough information, and hopefully we'll get that information through the grand jury investigation.
But even
if
no
crime,
I have
to wait for the facts to be developed by the grand jury investigation.
You know, Bob, that little exchange got more reaction than anything else in our 20-minute interview the other day.
Interesting.
Do you have any reaction?
I think that he's in a tough position, but I agree. I mean, there doesn't seem to have been any weapon. They haven't been able to find a weapon. There's no evidence that these three young men had a desire to threaten the police in any way. And it would seem that if the cops really wanted to question them, they could have just gone up to them and question them. So is an apology in order? I think probably it is. Is it the police commissioner's obligation to actually do the apology? I'm not sure. He's in a tough spot.
I was actually wondering from his answer there, and I'm not sure how much you can speculate on this, but I was wondering afterwards whether he was actually keeping open the door to the possibility that the investigation would find that the police did have some reason to shoot.
They are keeping that door open. Not only are they keeping that door open, at least some segments of the police department are aggressively trying to establish that's their primary goal, trying to establish that there was a reason for the shooting.
A reason as opposed to a mistake, you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Right. There is a segment within the police department that wants to show that the cops were correct to open fire on these three individuals.
Based on? What's their theory?
Well, I'm not sure what their theory is. I think their main theory is that they want to close ranks around the cops, and they don't want it established that the cops fouled up here. The theory they seem to have come up with is that there was, in fact, someone with a gun, perhaps a fourth man. But the thing that's really weird about that is when you hear this scenario, it's about a fourth guy who was outside of the car and ran from the scene, and yet the cops were firing at the three people in the car. So if the person with the gun was outside the car and fleeing,
what's the relevance?
Why are you firing at the car?
Bob Herbert, New York Times columnist. His column today, Waiting for Answers, is the title, of course, about the police shooting in Queens. Our lines are jammed. And Garrett in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a comment about the system we have in New York City where police officers who unload their weapons get an opportunity, do not get examined or give a statement as to what happened when they released their weapons. There are many major cities, and Miami is one of them, that requires police officers to give a statement concerning the, you know, the releasing of their weapon, especially when a death is involved. And here we're left to guess as to what they might have done. I understand the constitutional implications, but there are systems set up where the statements cannot be used as direct evidence against the officers to avoid the Fifth Amendment compulsion of testimony. So I just think that we have a culture here that we will not break with regard to asking police officers, why did you fire your weapon? I mean, it's not such an incredible question to have to ask somebody, especially when there's a death. But because of a culture we have in New York City that says we can't talk to them for 48 hours, and then after that we can't talk to them at all because we're afraid we won't be able to use the statements, you know, at trial, I think it's silly. I think there's ways around that, and we could do more. And I wish, you know, there was a better, somebody would look at that.
Garrett, thank you for your call. And what Kelly says is that the police didn't interview them, the internal affairs didn't interview them because they were afraid of inadvertently conferring immunity on them that would then make it harder to prosecute. Bob, do you believe that at face value?
Well, it's a little bit complicated. The caller makes a good point. The police department has procedures in effect anytime there's a police shooting and there's a thorough investigation and they try to find out exactly what happened. That process has been held in abeyance because in this case, the district attorney does not want the police department, for just the reason that you cited, they don't want to inadvertently confer immunity.
Although I have to say that doesn't speak well to their confidence in their own ability to conduct an internal affairs investigation without screwing up the prosecution.
Well, I agree with that, but the other thing is, if the police department is not going to make inquiries along these lines at the request of the district attorney, then it's up to the DA to go ahead and make these inquiries. You can't just sit for weeks at a time waiting to hear from the police officers what happened in this instance. I mean, I just think that that's crazy. Also, just to clarify the point that caller mentioned, the 48-hour rule. That mm-hmm. used to be that the cops couldn't be questioned at all for 48 hours.
That's gone now, right?
Yeah, that's no longer
in effect. That's a post-Diallo reform, right?
That's right.
Frank in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Bob Herbert. Hello.
Yes, well, of course, we need to remember the presumption of innocence. But as far as the demonstrations are concerned, I think that that they will work opposite to the interests of the demonstrators. In the Diallo case, it caused a change of venue. Now, if this case goes to trial, I would think that the demonstrators would prefer it be held in New York City and not changed elsewhere. So I think they work against their own interests by making a big deal out of this, and maybe Mayor Bloomberg might have influenced this with his unfortunate excessive remark.
What do you think, Bob Herbert?
I think that if the community wants to demonstrate, they should demonstrate. I mean, I've been out there, and people are really upset. And you've got some crazies who are actually talking about violence and illegal activities. You don't want to see any of that occur. So, if the way to demonstrate the fact that you're upset is to hold a protest march that's legal and peaceful, I probably favor that. And as to the question of whether they're acting against their own interests or not, I mean, I think when I was out there last week, I was running into the same faces that I ran into covering shootings like this back in the 1970s. I mean, mm-hmm. that's really a long time. So it's not as if people sort of remaining subdued has served their interests very well.
There's another statement we talked before about the relevance or irrelevance of whether there was a fourth man with a gun if he wasn't in the car at the time taking aim at the cops. Paladino, the police detectives union chief, has a quote in the Daily News today that I have to admit kind of shocked me. He said, what do these three men do? He's talking about the three who were shot. Mm-hmm. What do these three men do? How did Bell plan to pay to get married and raise his children? And he was referring to the possibility that they were involved in drug rings because there had been investigations into them. But that was not something that the police officers could possibly have known, as far as we know. And so it seems to me like a smear.
It is a smear, completely irrelevant to the incident. And even if the police officers looked at this guy and said, you know, we're aware this guy doesn't have a job. Where does he get his money? What's that got to do with anything on the scene at 4 or 4:30 in the morning?
I mean, for that matter, they didn't know that he was a bridegroom and was going to get married that day.
That's exactly right.
Let me ask you about another story in the news today. Did you hear about that Union Square death? I saw it in one of the other newspapers today. But it
isn't. I did hear about that, right.
Union Square melee kills teen. A pack of hooligans clutching bats, belts, knives, planks of woods killed a teen at the farmer's market in Union Square yesterday, reading from the Daily News, sending holiday shoppers ducking for cover behind tables of cookies and Christmas trees. Tayshaun Bellevue, 17, of Brooklyn, an avid basketball player, was stabbed to death and two other teens were injured during the 3:45 p.m. brawl. Right in the broad daylight. As many as 50 youths took part in the melee, which sources said might have stemmed from a dispute at nearby Washington Irving High School. I guess the question is, should we in the media be putting as much attention on that kind of death and the implications? And should, you know, people from communities who want to protect their communities be putting as much focus on that as a police shooting?
Well, I think in terms of media coverage, it's apples and oranges. This is a tragic situation and needs to be investigated and that sort of thing. But I don't think it's the same as when you have police officers who represent the government killing unarmed citizens, especially if there is a long pattern of that sort of thing happening. There's a couple of reasons why the Sean Bell case has gotten so much media attention. One is because he was killed on his wedding day. And the other is because the police fired 50 shots. If it hadn't been his wedding day, and if there had been a total of 12 shots with one death, I know this from being many years of the tabloids, it would not have been nearly as big a story. So some peculiar elements come into play when you determine, you know, what's a big story and what's not. So I think that the thing in Union Square sounds like a tragic story. Obviously, it deserves attention. And if it's possible to come up with some kind of remedies, fine. But I don't think it rises to the same level of importance as this police shooting.
Yeah, though, you know, we get calls every day from people who say many more black young people in New York are killed by other black young people than are killed by cops. And yet we talk about, you know, the line from Diallo to Stansbury to this as if it's something that's happening every 10 minutes.
Well, that is a fact that crime in black neighborhoods is a big problem and has taken a horrendous toll on young black people and young black men especially. But I have written quite a bit about that. And if you were to look back at the clips over the past few years, I've actually written more about that than I've written about police shootings or police brutality. So I do think that that's a big problem, and I think it deserves attention.
Bob Herbert, New York Times columnist. Before you go, one last thing. How much faith do you have in Richard Brown, the Queens DA?
You know, I can't tell. The column today talks essentially about the fact that I believe that the DA's office is dragging its feet on this investigation. I think Brown probably wants to do the right thing, but may not know yet what is the right thing. So I can't really assess my level of confidence in him at this point.
People calling for a special prosecutor, and I think you echoed this institutionally, that the DAs are just too close to the police and how they have this codependent working relationship every day. So institutionally it may not work, but it could work in this case if Brown is doing an honest job.
It could, but there's also, you have to worry about or be concerned about how the community sees this thing. I mean, the government has an obligation to the residents of New York City. And at the moment, I think the government is falling down on the obligation. I mean, there'll be a determination on whether these cops acted criminally or not. I'm not in a position to make that determination. Mm-hmm. But we have an obligation to the public to find out what really happened. And they're dragging their feet on that.
Waiting for Answers is the title of Bob Herbert's column in the New York Times today. Bob, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Atlantic Yards in the balance, Moynihan Station in the balance, Charles Gargano, the Empire State Development Chief. What's the legacy of George Pataki? Stay with us. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.